rules out certain things that someone might want to call a matter of indifference, but we say categorically, that's not what we're talking about. So if you want to describe or characterize an adiaphoron, gentlemen, we have to learn how to make singular and plural in this business, you know. In the singular, it's adiaphoron. And in the plural, it's adiaphora. So that we are simply establishing here what you can label by the term adiaphoron, and what you may not label as an adiaphoron. And that's very clear. You don't need any teacher to make that clear to you. And then we say in section 9, we further believe, teach, and confess that the community of God, in other words, the church, merely another expression for the church, in every place and at every time has the right, authority, power to change, to reduce, to increase ceremonies according to its circumstances, as long as it does so without frivolity, without offense, but in an orderly and appropriate way, as at any time may seem to be most profitable, beneficial, and salutary for good order, Christian discipline, evangelical decorum, and the edification of the church. And so that then leads into the articulate statement concerning this problem that was age-old, going all the way back to the time of the Augsburg Confession, namely, specifically, are rites and ceremonies, or let's simply say, is liturgy, in and of itself, the worship of God, or any part of it, which would mean then to say that it has to do with something that God has prescribed, that God has ordained, and that man's salvation hangs upon either the compliance or the rejection of that which God has ordained. And if it is that, then of course you can threaten a person very, very seriously and say that his soul's salvation is at stake. But if it is not that, then you have no business playing upon the conscience of a person in order to really gain your point. Now, I refer you again to the outline that I gave you from my syllabus. You notice at the bottom of that sheet, then, you have a reference to a dilemma. And what we are saying in that context, back in the apology, is that when you operate on the basis of this thing that we have been describing, in other words, where you begin to work on people with the idea that they better be doing that or they're not going to heaven, that's the long and short of it, you see, then you are putting a person between the horns of a dilemma. You know what a dilemma is. Well, the one horn of the dilemma is when they are extracted as necessary, you are working on a person's conscience. And when you simply say, throw them out of the window, then you're getting in trouble because you are doing away with things that are good, useful. You know, it's very interesting if you look at Article 15 and related articles back in the Augsburg Confession to see how our forefathers, on the one hand, objected like mad to being labeled obstructionists. Because they said this is a matter of perfect liberty. And people may do about that as they see fit. Then, in the next breath, they say, but we think it's a good thing. It's a good thing to have for order's sake, in order to have time and opportunity for worship, in order to have order in the worship so that there isn't pandemonium. And you know, that's one thing that you should learn to appreciate, man, about your Lutheran church and the stance of your church, namely how that it's so broad. It can fight like mad, you know, for a point, but it can be just as livable and loving as you want to find anything as far as getting along with people is concerned. And so we simply are saying, both in the apology particularly, and also here now in the Formula of Concord, we won't let you ram it down our throat. Now, when we said that, we'll say we like customs, we like ceremonies, and wherever they can be used to proper benefit for the uplifting of the saints, fine. There's a lot of good in them. So there's a difference between acknowledging that they're all right and useful and saying, but it's got to be on pains of salvation or damnation. And you see, that was the whole issue. Well, Melanchthon was stressing only this aspect of the matter, that since in and of themselves they are not the worship of God nor any part of it, we can afford, under the circumstances, to say to our victors, okay, after these 50 years, we'll go along with rites and ceremonies. But that's not the whole thing. That's not the whole compass of the matter. There are too many other angles that came into consideration. And so when this was presented to the Lutheran party, they said, no, Melanchthon, there's principle involved here. And you're not right. It's not as simple as you make it, that all that we have to do now is to say, okay, we'll conform in rites and ceremonies, because then there may be the possibility that we will be denying the truth. And we will be flying into the face of our Savior and our God. So, we will not accept this blanket proposition that for the sake of peace now between the Romanists and us, we will just simply forget completely what we stood for back in 1530, and we'll make about face, we'll change our stance, and we'll go along wholeheartedly with rites and ceremonies. So that is giving you a little steer into the substance of Article 10 as you find it in the Epitome or in the Solid Declaration. And with that, I think that I can leave you to proceed. And if you then have anything that you want to bring back, of course, you're always in order when you do that. But with that, this is simply a sort of an introduction into the matter itself, and the details of it you will appreciate by consulting, first of all, Article 10, which is the thing that we are concerned with first. But if you want to, then to reach back and to see how this was being handled in the time of the Augsburg Confession and the Apology.